he come home, and mother asked him, how's everything? How's everything else? I go, oh, he says, Frank has been up there and spoiled a whole bunch of them. Yeah. He was sore about that. And my father and I, we used to argue out in the field. And mother had to come out and take off her headcloth and wave it in the air and holler to us to remind us of our duty to the soil. We stand there and talk. He argued his principle. He said, never mind school. He said, be a self-made man, like a Snatzinger. That was a fella that was married to a squaw that was a... she was all right, this is no disgrace to her, but he had a squaw for a wife. He was the super on the Sandy Lake Dam for the government. I was supposed to go there and work on that dam, but I went to Dakota, my brother, my father was working up there. And my brother John went up there, but father would have rather had me up there, see.
He wanted you to be like him, huh?
Yeah, he said, you want to be like Snatzinger. See, self-made man. Self-made men are the best, see. But he had the wrong angle on that. Took a lot more than trying to be a self-made man. You had to have some education.
Well, when you saw your mother waving her kerchief, would you all start to work again?
Oh, yeah. Sure, I knew that. I hated to stand there and argue, you know, but father was stopping. I had to stop too. And we worked hard all the time. Yeah, but we argued all the time. He never agreed with me on a darn thing. Never.
Did your mother ever come to see some of your ideas?
She wasn't much on that order. She liked us boys, you know. But another thing, just to show you, how things were. My youngest brother, oh gosh, he was, I'm going to show you his picture. I think I got it.
The youngest brother.
Yeah. Chicago. He was with the McDonald's.
Up at my place several times looking for me, wanting me to go up with him. Well, he says, what about it? I said, did you join? He says, sure. I says, good. And the sentiment got terrific. There was an old ex, I think, Methodist minister that was organizing him. I think his name was Martin. Pretty sure it was Martin. That's how I got involved. I come into town and here's a hardware man who's a big dealer, young fellow. one of these emotional, wrought-up kinds, and he was deriding John Patterson's terrible language for him, son of a bitches, and this sort of thing. So I stepped up to him, and I said, Otto, I said, you're talking about my neighbors and friends now. I said, don't you think you should reconsider what you just said? Well, he finally decided he would. And I said, who's organizing this nonpartisan league? I said, Martin. I said, is he a Tom? He says, hey, Joe Smith. Little short, chubby guy. About 40, I suppose, 42. So I walked up to him. I said, you Mr. Martin? He was here to just steel himself because the thing was hot out there. I said, yes, I am. Are you organizing the nonpartisan league? He says, I am. So I pulled out my checkbook and I wrote him a check for $16 and handed it to him right in the streets of Jaffa. He says, what does this mean? I says, this means that I want to be one of these bitches too. And that was that. Well, it was pretty hot up there. I can tell you a lot of things have happened out there, but the upshot of it was that I was sent to the legislature, to the House first and later to the Senate in Montana, and that was hot too, so.
Well, you were elected?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Well, tell us those stories. That's what I like to... The sum of the stories of how you got about your campaign there.
Well, the campaign was really good. It was excellent, in fact. We were young, you know. There, most of us are completely inexperienced. And so when they had the county convention, they had instructions to select just a candidate for the House of Representatives. The senator wasn't elected that year. And confined themselves to that, no county offices. This is the directives that come from Great Falls headquarters. So they met, and on the first ballot, I was nominated. Well, that's all they were instructed to do. But I got up and I said, I think they're wrong in Great Falls. I think we should have an entire slate here in this county, as they can't know the circumstances here so well down there. And I said, I propose that we reconvene and discuss this matter. Well, the upshot of it was that we decided to run an entire slate in the county, excepting at the time we didn't have a candidate for a county attorney or state's attorney, as they called it. Or judge, I guess, not for judge either. Well, that was that. The slate was completed there. And the situation gets hotter and hotter. As the campaign, the primary election draws near. So a bunch of us youngsters, inexperienced, we got together and to plan something, to get some excitement just before the primary. So we decided on a parade. Hold a parade that would start in the Clear West, and tremendous county, then it's a hill county, Havre being the county seat. And
is it mountainous?
There's the Sweetgrass Mountains up in there, and they're sort of the Bear Paws out of Havre. But this is primarily a prairie country. So we concluded to start in the extreme western end. That is of what now would be Liberty County. That would be up towards Shelby. And then they'd keep joining the parade as we drew nearer to Havre and wind up with a meeting in Havre, at which I was supposed to speak. I was supposed to be the main speaker, of course. I sensed that this darn thing was going to be extremely hot early. So I suggested to a couple of young bucks and myself that we get on the train for down to see Governor Stewart. He's governor, an anaconda guy. To get a permit, first we went down to Havre, and railroad people were friendly, railroad men. So we had them hire the biggest hall in Havre for the night before the primaries, because we knew we couldn't get it. So they hired and paid for it. They had the hall. It's an organization that did it. Well, here you have the State Council of Defense, you know, and the County Council of Defense, the bars, meetings, this sort of thing. So we jumped on the train and we went down to Helena, long before the primary election. We marched into the governor's office, three green country kids, you know, homesteaders. Stewart was a very kindly guy, you know, and this sort of thing. I think he'd be a nice neighbor and that sort of thing, but he's a lousy governor.
An anaconda man.
Yes, he's an anaconda man. So he treated us very nicely and asked if I introduced myself as well as the other two and asked what he could do for us. And, well, I said, we're holding a meeting up in such and such a hall and giving the date in Havre. We'd like to have a permit from the State Council of Defense. And you could see he smiled indulgently. He hadn't heard about any of us. He didn't know anything about anything being hot or anything. So he made the permit out, you know, and signed it, president of the State Council of Defense. You see what I mean? He's the highest officer. So we just pocketed it.
Was the State Council of Defense? They had a state defense?
Oh, yes. They had control of meetings and this sort of thing. So, this was during World War I, you know. So, incidentally, I'd refused to buy any bonds whatsoever. During the serious that was focused on me. On top of it, the thing was hot. So we went back and agreed not a word to anybody of even our trip to Helena. Nothing was said. Then we got together and we planned this here parade and for the dance at my place. I'd built a good sized granary and we danced till sunup the night the parade was supposed to take. Then we went down to meet this parade. I met him in Chester. And we rigged out a guy in, Uncle Sam, you know, in striped overalls and striped long rope whiskers and this tattered great big hat, and put him in an old Model T Ford pickup, if you can call it that. That's what it was. He threw an old plow in the back end of the pickup. I don't know just why. And then with white cloth about that high all around the thing, we put this on. From the farm to the county seat to clean Havre. I missed an important deal. There's a couple of guys come up to my homestead with a great big car and they'd picked up two or three of these boys that who planned this thing. We were the youngsters being in the forefront of it. And he says to me, we came up from Havre to inform you that the meeting you've advertised, we put up posters for the meeting, will not be held. It takes bloodshed to be stopped. Is that right? Yeah. Well, I said, give us about 3 minutes. I beckoned the other guy, we start for the house. And I said, hell. They said, what are we going to do? I said, we don't need to decide that now. We'll give them tit for tat. So we turned right around and I told him, I says, you go back to Havre and tell your masters that someone's likely to get killed in Havre the night before the primaries. I just stepped it up a bit. Why, he said, you don't mean that. Yes, I says, that's my judgment in view of what you now said. And I says, now get the hell out of here. I says, we kill rats when we find them out in this country. I said, get. So after that, they says, now what the hell are we? And they left, you know. So I said, well, we better get together. We called a couple of more, and we sat up all night to plan what in the dickens to do. Well, this is what we decided to do, this parade. And at the same time, we agreed that we should tell different people actually what had happened. And I said, now don't tell them bloody so. You get the idea, so it wouldn't come back to us. And it spread to everybody, you know. You know that. I think that was a master strategy. I think so now. Well, the result was that everybody, now I says, if they come and ask about it, we agreed, if anyone asked us about us as helping or tenants, to rumors you hear lots of. And we'd evade the question, you know, and then that would drive it home that it's true, all right. Well, so we rigged up this parade, and all of the candidates rode in the car back of the parade. And I was supposed to speak at every stopping place. Chester, we were supposed to have in my hometown, Joplin, we were supposed to have Red Cross, was to serve us dinner. That's right, it was for the war relief, or whatever it was. And we passed the word around, nothing less than $1 to the Red Cross, you see, and no donations. Give a fat donation figure with good money well spent. And we come into Joplin, and it's too darn long a story, I don't like to go into it.
No, I think it's wonderful.
Well, we got into Joplin, and the women come to me immediately and said, why is this, they're trying to buy us off so not to feed you? I says, they are. He says, oh, definitely. Well, I says, I'm not concerned so much about that. Why? I said, I know we eat nevertheless. She says, of course you do. The women wouldn't yield. So I knew I couldn't make any votes at Joplin. I did not likely lose any, and I knew precisely who they were. So I got up on the platform there to park, and I told them that what I was being told when I came in here. And I says, now I said that interference with a red, with a war organizations in time of war, they claim to be 100%ers then, you know. Sedition, I says, violation of federal law. I says, in fact, I says, the gates of Leavenworth are wide open for some of you Joplinites. And then I pointed my finger right into this mug of the leader, you know. I said, behooves you men to watch your steps damn carefully from now on in. I said, because the gates of Fort Leavenworth are open. Well, they called me over after that. They were very much disturbed. I said, remember, it's the Red Cross, the war organization, operates as such now. They were absolutely alarmed, and it stopped them for the entire campaign. They didn't. I says, oh yes, I said, the next move is yours, when they called me in. He says, oh hell, he says, Josh, we don't get tough. He says, after all, this don't mean too much. I says, I'm not tough. I says, this is the next move is yours. I says, you started this racket. If you want to carry it out, go ahead. Well, we approached, finally my voice was giving out. We got close to Haver. I said, I can't take it. So they called up a Methodist preacher, or a preacher anyhow, that was dynamiting against the Red Light District down in Haver. And he was a crusader. Was way back. They called him up. And he came up. He took over. So he spoke in a couple of places before we got to Haver. And, oh yes, the deputy sheriff was following us every step. When we got closer to Haver, and he stood right close up, you know. When we got closer to Haver, the sheriff himself was out there too, so there was two of them. Well, just before we got into Haver, that parade was so long, incidentally, you couldn't see the tail end of it. Because what actually happened, George would say to Smith, he says, he's going to join the parade. He said, I'd like to, but I'm so darn busy, I can't get around to it. He says, what the hell is the matter with you? Are you yellow? You know what I mean? Everybody knew about this threat. I'm sure that our parade was three times as big as it would have been if it hadn't been for this threat. You know, that stirs people, that sort of thing. Well,
picture that.
So we approached Haver, and here comes a big car, and it takes the hubbub from this leading car. This leading car was this Ford, you know, with this on the side of it. A declaration of war from the farm to the county seat to Clean Haver. Declaration of war. Well, it followed up what we said, you know, that we predicted someone get killed in Haver. So we come on in. These same workers down in Havre, they come around and says, don't you get out of here. They'd organized a guard of 25 men to go around with us. Oh, I says, hell, I says, there's no call for that. I says, the kid's going to take that kind of a course. So we went up to see the mayor. These two guys and I, and I introduced all of us. Mayor held out his hand, yes, 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 Mr. Holland. He said, I'm very glad to know you. In fact, I know you quite well. Glad to meet you personally. And what can I do for you? Well, I says, I don't know if you can do much. And I says, I don't know if you'd care to do anything. But I says, so we came to inform you that we're holding a meeting in such and such a hall. This evening. And I said, there's been considerable talk. I thought you might know about it. Oh, he said, I'm sorry, but he said, that meeting can't be held. I said, why? He says, the Council of Defense taking action prohibited. Mm. I said, that right, yes. Well, I says, you're not speaking of the State Council, the County Council of Defense. He said, yes. I held out this other. I says, do you recognize that signature, Mr. Mayor? He said, yes, I do. I didn't let him take it. I held it up. Yes, I do. I didn't read it for the mayor. And I'd already prearranged that the date shouldn't be read where, when it was signed, you know. So he read it, and there you are. Well, in view of all the talk, you know, they could anticipate that we carried weapons as well then. Here we came fortified with authority to hold the meeting, and we were up there just shortly before the meeting was supposed to start. But incidentally, as we drove into Havre, big car sideswiped the leading car just a little bit, took a hubcap or something off, but we kept going later. A few cars collided a little, but they were going slow and didn't amount to anything. When we come into Havre, I'll never forget that. Here the parade. Oh yes, the driver had been instructed to wind around the street so as not to run into across himself like a great big snake coiling around in Havre. And we told him that if anyone was arrested, to go peacefully with the officers, but they wouldn't have enough officers if they deputized all of Havre to make an impression on this parade, you know. So everything stopped. Oh yes, and a stop for nothing. You follow the car ahead of you as close as you can. Everything must stop in Havre excepting this parade. And it did. And people stand on the corner and they'd read this thing. And, oh yes, it's red paint from the farm to the county seat to clean it. They'd read that. And some of them, you could just see them just get furious. And others, again, they'd laugh and they'd yell at somebody. They'd point. You could see them reading, you know. Very interesting. Very interesting.
So you went on, got to the main place.
To the meeting?
Uh-huh.
Sure. And I was introduced. And here's a solid block that's organized there for disruption, you know. You can see them. You can know who they were. I got mad. I looked at them. One front corner occupied completely. You could see where they were. So I stood and looked at them for a while, and I was getting mad. I stood there quite a while. I never said a damn thing. Just to look at them, and I slowly raised my hand. I says, your booth. Now, I says, we know very well what your purpose here is. And I said, when the time comes, when you think you should act, I said, don't stop because of us. But I said, perhaps it's only fair that I should tell you that we're completely prepared to handle any situation you can create within these walks. Now, you know, we'd predicted someone get killed. We had a permit from the governor. They imagined we had permit to carry arms, that we were carrying arms. I'm sure of that. So they never disturbed a darn bit. Not a darn thing. Until finally, towards the end, they let loose some gas of some kind in there. I don't know what it was. Some people got sick of that. But it wasn't enough to stop the meeting, but it was bad. Bad enough. Fun. There never was a time when there was any courage required.
Well, I think so. After all.
It was always a possibility, but you don't think about those things. It was just fun. We were young and it was just fun.
So you
can. But the only reason was because of this. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been elected. We were all elected, the whole darn slate carried.
Well, And then you went to the legislature.
Oh, yes.
That must have been interesting.
Oh, that was a row, you're darn right. But at the same time, we had a lot of fun. We elected an old Norwegian. He wasn't terribly old, but he was getting along. Seedy looking. He looked like he wasn't quite as clean as he might have been, and he looked like he'd been sleeping in his clothes for a long time. So something like Senator from Arkansas, what's his name? The sharp guy. But anyhow, the Ole Sandvik was the name. I'll never forget it. He looked seedy. And he looked like he definitely, he felt like he would want to douse him in water and while he was his hair off. Looked like what they call a hayseed right. So we elected him for assessor. Now the time comes when assessments should be made in Havre, and there was a lot of talk around what fun they were going to have with this hayseed assessing Havre. But Ole comes in, and he gets his deputies, and he sends them out in the poorer districts, and he himself takes them to the main street, the big business. Went into one of the big stores that this where he started. They brought out books, and he looked them over. He says, well, you could better bring out the other set of books. He says, why? You mean to say that you charge us with having prepared this set of books for the assessor? He says, that's definitely what I do say. And he says, either you'll get that other set of books now, or I'll close your store and start taking in an inventory. That is tough stuff, you know. Okay, down the street the thing went, you know, and Favre was in a turmoil because they'd had the thing in the palm of their hands heretofore, you know. Well, so I met some of Carruth, who's the big boss in Havre of the opposition. So I says, how are you getting along with your assessor down there? How's Ole making up? He says, he's made quite an impression on Havre. What's his answer, you know? Well, so when it comes to assess Carruth, had a big hotel in Havre, and he had a lot of other real estate, and others as well. And Ole Sandvik, he just multiplied the assessed values by many fold. All of this stuff. The state board of the Democrats in charge of Montana, the state equalization board, finally they appealed it, you know. They give him orders, he give him instructions to lower the lease assessment to such and such a point. Ole writes back and he says that I have your letter of such a date. He says, I'll delay taking action till I hear from you again. Because, he says, I want you to know that if these instructions stand, I'll lower in like proportion the assessment of every piece of real estate in Hill County. He said, do you want this order to stand? He licked the State Board of Equalization. They lay down and rolled over because they knew he wasn't bluffing. It's a line all the time. All the time. I was known as the hard-boiled Scott son of a bitch. That was Governor Stewart that battled right to be there. In the Senate. And the harpoon operator. I had many names.
The harpoon operator.
Yeah. Had no respect for persons. Yeah. I was young and hot-headed. And I think one term in the Senate, I'm not sure, but a guy by the name of Cowan comes up, a great big, tall, dignified-looking bird with a bald head, maybe about 60 years old. Come up from Fort Benton, you know where Fort Benton is?
A big idea.
Yeah, it's the south far of Havre, between Havre and Great Falls. So he come up from Fort Benton, he's elected to the Senate. I'd heard of him. He looked me up the very first day, told me he knew me quite well, he watched my record, and he says he wanted to look me up and assure me he'd stand for a square with me. And he'd made his entire campaign for a metalliferous tonnage tax. All the tax before was the surface of the dark, the mines. and it was pretty hot. So I told him, I said, that very interesting. I said, you're going to fight with Anaconda down the line? He says, I am. And I said, you run on a program of a metalliferous tonnage sack, concentrating your entire campaign on that. That's right. He says, that's right. He says, that's where I stand. I says, you're on a hell of a hot spot. He says, what do you mean? Well, I said, maybe you're in position to take it. But I said, you're going to have a lot of experience, a lot of fun down here. I can assure you about that. Well, he says, I think I know what you mean, but he says, I'm a fairly big operator. He says, I've got a big ranch down there, and he says, I've got an establishment in town, a business establishment, a store of some sort. But he says, before I came down here, I went outside of the state and borrowed enough money to pay off every cent I owed in the state of Montana. Well, I says, that showed greater care and more intelligence than the average guy that comes down here with good intentions has. But I said, I'm afraid it isn't enough. He said, what do you mean? I said, it happens that the mortgagee, merely by declaring that he feels insecure, can call for the payment of the note before the due date arrives in Montana. That was the law at the time. Insecure. What the hell? Why would you ask? And I says, keep in mind there's no state boundaries in this fight. As if the Anaconda needs your papers, as all they need do is to look up the records and find out who's holding them. And I says, they write them a letter and say, we need them, and they'll buy them from them. Then you'll be obligated to the Anaconda Company direct. That's what they want, that's what you'll have. You might as well know it. Well, time comes for to vote on this metalliferous tonnage tax. Sure, they did plenty of work on all of us. They tried to get in to show a guy a good time, you know, and stay away from politics utterly and completely. And then at the very last minute, I had that happen only once. Try to spring this friendship deal. Mm-hmm. Well, when the time comes, the roll call comes on this metalliferous tonnage tax, Senator Cowan slowly gets up on his heels. And he says, I want to explain my vote. Then he gave reasons for voting diametrically opposite to his entire campaign. He voted against the bill.
He voted against.
And when he got through, I was young and hot-headed, I got up and I literally ripped the shirt off from his back. And then I was sorry. That night he came to me and tears just rolling down his face. He told him that it was just what I told him might happen had happened. He said, I tried to beg off so that he'd be absent and not voting. But they insisted that he not only vote, but he give these reasons. They give him a typewritten statement to make why he voted as he did.
Oh.
And there you are. I mean by what they call it? Right deviation, left deviation. Yeah, absolutely. I was shocked. I says, hell, that's just silly to fool with this thing, because I said they'd at least concede as much if you didn't make any struggle at all. You just turned it over to them. The thing is inconceivably lousy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The thing is plenty lousy. Oh, yes. And say, well, me and they says, why aren't you with us? I was a leftist. I said, hell. But for the best of reasons. I says, why? Well, I said, I'd be just wasting my time and effort. I was to propose to you the steps necessary to do the things that you claim you want to do. I said, you turn it down. Which was true, of course. But it's a hell of a way of carrying on politics. Dave Ward, he says, Henry, he says, I've put in a substantial sum of money in a campaign fund if you'd run for the legislature. I know, I could have been right up in here, I didn't want to die. I figured it was just if a progressive person must work where the people are if he's going to work or leave it alone. Yeah. If you just sit and dream by yourself, that doesn't mean anything either. come close to getting it himself, sure.
Wheeler.
B.K. Wheeler.
Yeah.
He took refuge in a boxcar. I forget, what was that in Roundup, I wonder. And the cowboy rushed him into this boxcar, and he climbs in himself, and here he meets the guy, the mob, with a nice big rifle in his hand, standing in the middle of the door. He says, if you guys want your guts scattered around, he says, keep coming. And Wheeler left town across the plowed fields, and they after it got dark.
And then I thought it was a leave?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that was where Al got tied and feathered. Al Canusa, wasn't it, in Montana?
No, I don't think so. I'm going to study science. I'm never going to school, so I figured that, well, I'd make a quick buck if I could and see if I figured it might not be too late yet. That was that. Well, that never happened, of course. But I was state manager for the Farmer Labor Party, which is organized in Montana. And without funds, the finance committee didn't function. So the only reason I agreed to go along with it was I told him I'd run up to the primaries. When I was through, I was going to wash my hands clean completely because it was silly. All right? So the finance committee didn't. We put La Follette, I told him I'd stick to it, we put La Follette on the ballot, we did, with stickers. He worked a week without any thing to eat, except him four times. Someone else took me to the restaurant for a bite to eat. Another guy bought a newspaper man, Great Falls, bought a shirt for me, because I got my clothes were getting dirty. I paid for my own room, I was going to finish that job before I quit. I was strapped. Well, then I left, and I come. I told the boys I was coming down to North Dakota to buy a farm, and they laughed their food heads off. Well, I figured the pendulum had swung as far as it would go. I knew that during the inflation that the prices had gone up. Now I figured it was down at the low again, and I thought, man, I knew I could buy a farm without a nickel. I thought I could, and I figured it'd swing back a bit, and I'd sell and get a little money anyhow. Start up. And, well, that was that. So I went down here, and they held their state convention of the Farmer Labor Party. I told them I was through. I told all the leaders I was through, definitely through, but I was nominated candidate for lieutenant governor. I think they wanted me to preside in the Senate if they could, because there had been such a row when I was down. It's remarkable, just the same, I don't want to talk about these things, not much more. What one person can do if you don't give a damn for anything. I mean in a spot like that. And an innocent looking bill introduced by Senator Greener. But when you study it, and keep in mind there's hundreds of bills, and the bill you've got on your desk is not the bill you're considering. It's a true copy of it. It was printed ahead of time, and then amended up, and it may be completely different than that. If you want to know what the heck it is, you'd have to go to the, what office is it now, one of the engrossing clerks. I think the banker said there. It was referred to the banking committee, which provided that produce, an increase from livestock, was included in the mortgage, although it was not mentioned there. Now, it's a general habit in Montana for sheepmen especially to sell the wool crop, you know, to carry on with, even if the sheep were mortgaged. So, this thing came up. Of course, it's a horrible chance for exposure. And it happened with square hats from some colleges, you know, it all trailed into the evening session of the Senate. Come up for on general orders, you know, that's when they discuss the thing, open for debate. I got up and I says, I'd like to ask the father of this major a question. Yes. And what's the purpose of this bill? Well, of course, he was slow-witted, and he was stuttering to beat help. And he come out with, he was telling what a hard story for the bankers, you know, to lose some money and that sort of thing. And I says, no, I can't accept that. Can't accept that. But I says, Now, I says, would the bill be quite all right? Would you accept an amendment that provided that a money lender must first call attention to this thing? If he's in an office, which a money lending office, he must put a copy of the bill on the of the wall. Then I turned around. I said, claimed that this was nothing more or less than packing a deck of cards, palming an ace in a poker game, writing something into a contract unbeknown to one of the contracting parties, etc., etc. Short and sharp. And then I quit. Next morning, Senator your senator from Carbon County came up to me and he says, oh, he says, I'm disappointed. I said, why? What have I done? Well, he says, you had them so utterly licked last night. And he says, and you didn't fall off. I had to move him to enact to strike out the enacting clause. So they would have been dead. Carried. He didn't know that. Well, I says, I think I didn't know. He says, what do you mean? I said, have you worked with me all this time in the Senate, and you still have the impression that I give a damn about passing that bill? He's a good guy, but he's the rightest of it, aside from that. I said, this for your information and that only. I said, the only reason I opened my trap was that otherwise any member of the Senate could say that he relied on the banking committee that recommended this bill, didn't know what it contained. Utterly impossible to read all the bills. No one raised any objection. I says, that's why I had to expose it on the floor. But I said, you know, there's one thing a Montana and one take, and I think it goes for practically all Americans. And that's palming a poker, an ace in a poker game. I said, you won't take it. I said, don't you know that? I says, I'll bet you money that I'll go into any county, you name the senator that voted for that bill, and I'll kill him politically, and I'll do it low. I says, I'll challenge his morals. I say, he's a completely unfit for any trust whatsoever. Offer to divide my time with him on the platform, and insist that he say why he voted for this bill. You know what I mean? Well, the result was the next morning, I shouldn't have told him. They recalled the bill from the House and killed it.
Yeah.
Sure. A friend of mine happened to be down in the governor's office. The bill was laying there for him to sign. We finally, by conference committees, had agreed on the bill. And we'd lick the oil company. But here in this bill, there for the governor to sign, coming from the engrossing committee, was the bill as the oil company wants.
Well,
in a relationship between I forget the contact now, with the engrossing clerk and the Anaconda Copper Mining Company. Night of front conference in Bismarck. These other guys had advertised it for weeks until they built up the conference. 3 days later. 3 days later. For utter confusion. And trying to...
Well, was this actual? Was that the left? Extreme
yeah.
Left?
So, here we had our conference down there, this United Front conference, and these others had called in the conference, verdict. And, when they held their meeting to elect me to the conference, down here, the secretary of the Farmers Union also, he says, they've changed the date, the timing, haven't they? I didn't know anything about it. And then for 3 days later, I says, no, I says, not that I know of. Well, he says, he had a letter from Burdick. Well, I says, if such is the case, I says, to be safe on the thing, I'd suggest that you give me a credentials for the two. you know, for the 2 days.
Uh-huh.
United Front Conference. All right. So they did. And we had our conference, and the boys, it was very clever work done, the cartoon and so on, but it was a direct attack from the first United Front conference, which was entirely wrong. I tried my darndest to get them to just hang over, elect some representatives of the first United Front conference to stay over for the other conference and urge unity. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that would have been correct politically from any angle, for that matter. But no, no, they just made a heck of a little clever, clever little posters they sent out too. I wish I had a copy of them. Oh yes, they called in AC Townley. They got everything they could on the ball. So I stayed over for the conference, for the second conference. And I come in and they were going full blast. And as soon as there was a pause, this one politician after another was speaking. Short speeches. One, two, three, and so on. I sat there from time after, a bit as I said. I got up. So when one who got through, called Mr. Chairman. And, yes. He recognized me. I said, where's your credential committee? No answer. I said, there must be a credential committee, isn't there? Held up my credential. I says, we had a call by the from the president of the Holiday Association, as well as the Farmers Union, to elect a delegate here. No, he says, no conference, no credential committee. Well, I said, does that mean that an elected delegate, and I called, I mentioned the time factor was such, if we hadn't already been organized, we couldn't have been there. And in any event, yeah, so no credential. So after a bit, Burdick spoke. He gave a devilish demagogic speech. I said, Mr. Burdick, raise a question, ask a question. And one of the newspaper men that set up in spot says, Burdick got the hell out of there. When I formulated my question, you know, I laid the base for it, question on his speech. And she said to me, it's a woman, she says, he's who's the guy? Who's the guy? Nobody knew. He says, he's putting you on the spot. Get the hell out of here. Get out fast. So Burdick left, you know. He left at the time, and it didn't amount to much. But clearly, this was done to hamstring a real United Front conference. That's the purpose of it. But almost taking it over. Let Burdick be president, for that matter. Mm-hmm. And they had all the respect possible for us, too.
What was that one you were telling about last night over here at town?
Well, it was a case like my own township here that they were foreclosing a widow woman, quite a section of land. And the odd face of it was that she just borrowed this money a couple of 3 years ahead of this time. And then this depression comes on, it's utterly impossible to get any money, and the mortgage wasn't excessive either, but she couldn't meet the interest, so they foreclosed. And it was a farmer that lived out there that foreclosed, but he didn't live on the farm now, but he had a farm out there. So I thought, here is an elegant place to do something, perhaps. And it's a religious conservative group, very conservative. Old neighborhood. So I talked to different people. I said, what do you think about Central foreclosing, Mrs. Johnson? I said, what's the question? Well, I said, perhaps, I said, if the community would approach him right and make a request, he might reconsider it. But what do you think about getting the community together in the schoolhouse to discuss it? Yeah, maybe that would be good. So I got two of them together, and they concluded, and I said, they said, you called me, you know, I said, it'd be much the best that I did. Well, known as a regular. I said, it'd be much the best if you'd call the meeting. So they did. I figured I could run it from the side if I wanted to. And they had some other matters that they took up at the same time. I forget what that was. And it was agreed that a certain farmer should bring up this matter at this meeting. And when the time came, Oh, yes, I presided at the meeting. Presently, the time came, there was nothing else. Anything further? No, he didn't come. Oh, Pete, I said, I thought you had something you wanted to bring up to this meeting. I grumbled. He said, haven't you got something? I laughed. Oh, I says, you mean Semple foreclosing on Mrs. Johns? Yes. Well, I says, personally, I says, I think it's worthy of a discussion, can't do any harm. Anything could be done about it. So, we discussed this for quite a while. Finally, I suggested that perhaps, I said, if we might make out a petition, a letter, you can call it, requesting him to reconsider this. I knew somebody just get furious with meddling in his business, you know. But he's only preparing the crowd to take action. So, I said, perhaps he'd reconsider it. So they asked me to draw up such a letter, which I did. And maybe I wasn't justified in doing it, but I had this in substance in the letter, that when the time comes, when the farmer who produces the food essential to sustain life provides his food at less than cost of production, I says, under such circumstances, there is no reason why the Shylock should be permitted to take his pound of flesh or the moneylender collect his interest. Or something like that. And of course, I knew Semple would blow right up, and that was the reason of sticking it in there. Well, they trudged around in the snow and walked, the roads were blocked, and called on everyone in the township to sign this. Which they did, all but Semple's brother-in-law. They didn't go to his place. Well, the result was that Semple was just furious, you know, and the foreclosure went down. Well, they've already started to act, you know. So most of them come down there, and you'd be amazed. This same Pete, when we were stopping this foreclosure, ahead of time, the group was talking. Someone said, we may wind up in jail. Well, Pete says, that isn't important. And he went every word he says. He says, if I'm on the outside, he says, I'll blow a hole in that jail. He says, I know how to handle dynamite. And he meant every word of it. That was the sentiment of the times. Mm-hmm. Conservative guy, politically. Mm-hmm.
So then, what did Semple do then?
Well, Charlie Taylor, I think he pulled one. I told him about it, you know, down there when I went down to the Unite Front Conference. This was at the same time. And here they had a great big hand slamming down on a fat guy running with a money bag in each hand. You get the idea. The United Farmers League, coming down to smash this like you smash a little fly or a bug, you know, running. He folded that together and sent it to Semple. I didn't have anything to do with it, but of course I was credited with it. I didn't mind, but it was kind of lousy of Charlie to do it without consulting me. You know, he just sneaked it on the side. He asked what the name of this guy was, and he nailed it. I know he didn't.
That didn't suit his feathers down any.
Huh?
That didn't suit his feathers down any. Then did he foreclose?
Oh, yes, he foreclosed. You want the story?
Yeah.
I'm afraid that I'm boring you, and I don't like to put it on.
It's wonderful.
Well, we went into Hillsboro. No, simultaneously, this foreclosure was coming up. This very same day, some members of the Holiday Association up in northern Trail County come down to see me. Told me of their foreclosure day, sale coming off that afternoon, asked me what I thought should be done about it. So I told him of this case down here in my township, and I proposed that we all get together. I said, I'll organize these guys on this end of the county, you organize them on the other end. We meet in Hillsboro and stop the darn thing. All right, that was agreed. Day comes for the foreclosure, and the hell of time you'd think that they were in up for a picnic, these guys, and I got disturbed. I said, heck, I don't know what the heck is going to happen here. Something should be done to prepare these guys. So I suggested that we should get together first in a meeting and go into the armory and hold a little meeting. The intent was to steal these guys, if possible, so that we wouldn't be just laughed at when it was over. Sure, we stormed over to the armory, and it was full. And I took the floor and told them that we'd come here to stop these foreclosure sales. And I said, that's a revolutionary act. It's contrary to law. It's going in defiance of all authority. But I said, personally, I think it's necessary. But I said, I don't know the situation here. I said, everybody knew that we were coming. I said, the sheriff may have deputized a lot of people on the outside, and any one of these deputies, as I understand it, could sell this property. But the property must be sold at the courthouse steps to make it legal. Now, I said, I'd feel silly. I said, if we have gathered here this big crowd, and we come back and this farms are sold, these people lose their homes. So I said, I think we should kind of plan what we're going to do. Well, someone says, what do you propose? Well, I said, the only thing that comes to my mind is, I think it might be worth considering electing two men to take over, each having the responsibility for one group. Divide this into two groups. I says, I would think one group should storm into the sheriff's office and hold anyone that's in that office there till after the time that place can be legally sold. In the office, we can't get out. And permit nobody to enter the office, just stop it. The other group take charge of the courthouse steps, because I says, if it's going to be sold, that's where the final stand will be. That's where it must be sold. Well, they discussed that, and they were hot for all, they were getting hot. So I talked very seriously, you know, to get it out from a Skylark proposition. So they voted unanimously that this should be done, and someone proposed that I take charge of the group on the courthouse steps. Okay. Well, I said, I can't handle this alone. I said, I need some help. Therefore, I says, I'm going to call for volunteers. Now, I says, I want it understood that I don't want anyone near those courthouse steps that aren't ready to take whatever action might be necessary to stop the sale. I said, only those that are ready to take such action do I want in this group. Now I said, who wants to join me at the courthouse steps? The crowd rose up to a man. Every darn one up. Whoop, can't use you all. You better divide this crowd on some other basis. All right, so they did. And someone was elected to go down to the sheriff's office with his group. And I was supposed to lead the group at the courthouse steps. And after a bit, there's some young fellows in my group, of course, and there wasn't the other group, too, so they come up to me, people going in and out of the courthouse. They said, should we permit this? Should we let them? They were keen for action, you know. Should we let them go in and out? They like action, you know. Well, of course, I should say we shouldn't interfere more than necessary. I think that would have been proper. But you know, I'm human too. So I says, well, I says, we come in here to impress them on our determination. I says, if you feel like it, I says, I don't mind. You can put your shoulders against the door and hold it if you want to. Hold it so that there's nothing fierce will happen. So they locked the courthouse up, so nobody went in, nobody went out. People look silly, they come from the inside, and these young fellows stood with us back to the door, you know, maybe look back at them, and there you are. All right. So Calder comes up. He's the lawyer for the mortgagee. He's foreclosing. Calder comes up. Comes up the steps, and I'm on the high courthouse steps as well. And he comes up, and these boys stand there. He'd just come from downtown. Then he walked up to me and he says, I've got to get into this courthouse. Well, I says, if you can, I says, go on into the courthouse. I says, why tell me about Well, I mean, of course, he reasonably sure that I had something to do with it, or I wouldn't have been there. So he starts to talk to the crowd. I says, just a moment, Mr. Campbell. I says, we know that some of you lawyers love to talk. And I says, in fact, some of you make a talk that's worth it, a speech that's worthwhile. Now, I says, if you feel the urge to give these people a speech, I says, I'm sure that nobody's going to object. Only, I says, the merits of these cases are not to be discussed here now. I says, that's settled, what we're going to do about this foreclosure case. That's what he wanted to talk about. Well, of course, it stopped him. And he rolled around, he gave me a cigar, and then he left. All right. After a bit, he was worming his way down to the sheriff's office. He'd gotten quite a ways down. Someone says, hell, here comes Caldor. Shall we let him in? Someone says, hell no. He says, throw him out of the window. So they picked him up and threw him out of the window. So I'd already passed the word around. I said, now, I says, after this is all over, I says, I want everyone to meet in front of the courthouse steps. You got something that I want to say to them. So, the whole town was up. I think they could have robbed the bank. I don't think there's anyone in town that knew, that slept down there. The whole town was up. And in any event, after it was over, they all gathered up in front of there, and I'd worked on a little piece. I mean, I hadn't written it down yet, but giving the reasons for this thing to be done. Then I decided against stating that on the courthouse steps, but I climbed up, you know, on the, what do you call this side? On the side, you know, there's up. I stood up on there and called to their attention. I says, now, as I don't think there's any need of discussing the action we've taken now, as the circumstances are such that such action is necessary, unfortunately. But I said, I want to remind you that there's another foreclosure due here at such and such a time. And this also must be stopped, and we'd like to have you all show up. I said, how many feel like you want to help on this deal? Practically everywhere the hand went up. So I said, now, I says, there's just one pledge I think that you should consider before you leave. And I said, I'd worked the pledge out, and the pledge was that we pledge collect, that individually I'll do everything within my power to, and collectively we will stop every attempted foreclosure sale in the state of this depression or something of the past, something like that. Now, I says, when I'll read this to you three times so you know precisely what you're acting on, and I says, all of you who will take this pledge, I want you to raise your clenched fist, and in a strong voice say, when I ask you, do you take this pledge? Say, I do. Hear the whole thing. And that's what I wanted to picture of. Man, I'd give most anything for a picture. Wouldn't that have been good? Yeah, they took the pledge.
Even the sheriff, but you said that.
They're not sheriff. No, the guy in charge of the National Guard in the state, Earl Sarles. So Earl Sarles called me over afterwards, and he says, now, he says, I'm looking after a piece of land that we're foreclosing on with a sale day coming up such and such a time. He says, will you stop it? He says, I want you to. I think he meant it. I said, I want, but I said, we will.
So tell about the foreclosure then. How did they stop it?
Well, we just simply held the sheriff down in the office, and they must have it at the courthouse steps. There was nothing happened.
Did they bring it up, and there was no bidding, or did they just
No. How could they bring it up? The sheriff was held in his office, and it's got to be sold at the courthouse steps.
Oh, he held the sheriff there.
Yes. No, the sheriff was kept right in his office till the thing was open. No, there was no attempt.
Well, in some of them, there was offered to... Well, those were the auction sales. They were offered to sell, and then there was no bidders.
Yes, that was a lot of that. That was a different type of a sale. That generally wasn't real estate.
Oh, that was an auction of the...
There generally was these foreclosure sales of personal property.
Uh-huh. Well, I heard in Minnesota there was some farm somebody bid 4 cents for.
Oh, was it? Well, that could have been done. Now, we didn't follow those tactics. Maybe we were just green.
John Bush used to have those, and when he was head of the holiday in Minnesota, you know. Mm-hmm. And they would bring it up, and they would allow the sheriff to offer the sale. And then they'd offer bid 4 cents on it or something like that.
Yes, I can see how that would work beautifully on personal property. I don't see how it worked on real estate, because supposing that I handled it for the mortgagee that's foreclosing. All right, I shove it in, I make a sealed bid up to the amount of what he owes me, perhaps. But that bid is already here. The sheriff can't ignore it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure it worked. I'm not challenging that. I'm sure something did it, but I think it was due to weaknesses on the other side that they could get by with it. Mm-hmm. I think it could be handled.
Did you ever know John Bush? It was head of the...
I didn't know him personally.
Oh, yeah. I interviewed...